Today we celebrate one of those Catholic things. I don't know that many other Christians celebrate the solemnity of Christ, the King of the universe. Why do we celebrate this? Americans don't have kings. In fact, America was founded to not have a king. Things were pretty rough in old England at the time. There was certainly no freedom of religion, and they came here for that. So why do we have the solemnity of Christ the King? Well, kingship doesn't originate in England or on this earth. Royalty has its origin in God himself. Still, there is a fascination in our country with royalty. If the tabloids want to sell papers, all they have to do is put something on the front of the page having to do with the royal family in England, and people buy these things and want to know. No matter how tawdry it may become, it's almost like a soap opera. I mean, it's almost, it is. There's this fascination, but I don't think it's a matter of identification so much as it is entertainment. So where does royalty really come from? There is a beautiful old Christmas hymn to our Blessed Mother that throws some light on this. I'll read you the beginning lyrics. It's called, Behold a Mystical Rose. Our Blessed Mother is the mystical rose. Behold a mystical rose from thorny stem hath sprung. Of David's lineage God chose to give to the world his son. All hail, O house of gold. They're referring to our Blessed Mother as the house of gold. All hail, O house of gold, of whom ancient prophets foretold. Your royal praises we sing. Your womb was the court of our king. There we have it. There we have royalty, where we have divinity. And so Mary becomes royal by her association with him. And this is by God's design. Today's gospel passage shows us the origin of all royalty. God's love is expressed in his passion. There we find divine love on display. We don't find any precious stones there. No jewels are in evidence. And the crown that he wears is a crown of thorns. What a different royalty that is, isn't it? Here we find the ruler sneering at Jesus. If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself. But Dismas, the one we call the good thief, responds and says that Jesus had done nothing wrong. Well, they had, but he didn't. He hadn't. Then this thief says to Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus answers, this day you will be with me in paradise. Now note, this is a point that some will bring up to Catholics and say, well, see, he didn't go to purgatory. Jesus said, this day he'd be in paradise. But the fact is, he didn't send him to paradise immediately. He allowed him to remain on the cross and die. He remained for his purgatory, suffering for the temporal punishment due to the sins that he committed. And then that night, he was in heaven. Our culture doesn't understand any of this. The church is on such a different wavelength. Even our church buildings are different. I think they demonstrate how different God's ways are than those of mere mortals. As I stand here and I look at the congregation, at you, I see the doors at the back of the church. But if I walk through those doors, suddenly I'm in the front of the church. The outside is the front, or the front and the outside. The outside of the church and the front is the front. If you say you're going to meet somebody in front of the church, you don't mean you're going to meet them at the altar. You're going to meet them there. Now, you could say it's a little interesting quirk, but it demonstrates how different things are here. This place is a place of life because God dwells here in a special way. It was designed specifically to acknowledge him to be who he is. When my parents celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, I celebrated the Mass. It was not the easiest thing in the world to do because they were standing in the same place that they had stood 50 years before I existed. And my existence is a result of that union. And they stood there before God, committing themselves to him through their relationship. And it dawned on me how much we lived in that church. My mother was baptized in it. I was baptized in it. They were married in it. I received my first Holy Communion. All the great events of our lives took place there. And each week we'd come to be fed and filled with divine life, which we call grace, to help us to carry on throughout the week. And we fail. We come in with our failure. It doesn't keep us away. And here we're absolved. We're forgiven. And then again, we're fed with his body and blood. It's such a beautiful cycle when you realize what it really is. And we see each other year after year. I remember when I was ordained, two elderly women came over to me and they said, "You know, we remember you when you were little. We watched you as an altar boy. We've noticed you all these years. And that's the way it is because we know each other. We're a part of one another, even if we don't know each other's names." What a wonderful thing. And then the day comes when our bodies are brought here. And the priest blesses us. But by that time, we have not only gone through the back door of the church, but the Lord himself has opened the front door. And we're filled with light because we see his face for the first time. It's not that we haven't lived our life before his face, but it is only at this point that we see it. And we will find that he's not wearing a crown of thorns anymore. The crown he wears is made up of the loving acts of the lives of his people. When we die, living a life faithful to him, we become his crown, and we are royalty for all eternity. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.